darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Quarter.
Howdy, and welcome to the Hamilton Corner. Your customary host, Abraham Hamilton III, is busy doing other things. Got a family life conference in town for the weekend that Urban Family is sponsoring. So Abe is over there helping make sure that that thing happens. And I am Brian Fisher, sitting in for Abraham Hamilton III. Nobody can take his place. Just kind of fill in for him as best you can. Along with me, Jeff Reed, the producer. Jeff, I was reading this afternoon. I don't know if you saw this, but the Tampa Bay Devil Rays
are
going to split their home games with Montreal.
Montreal. Does that make any sense?
It makes absolutely.
I mean, what kind of home field advantage would Tampa Bay have in Montreal?
Now, I'm assuming that they're the same franchise that the Montreal Expos used to be.
Yeah, I don't
know. And so they came down and set up in Tampa Bay. So they feel like they've got some kind of connection to Montreal. But, hey, if I'm in Montreal and you abandoned me, why would I want to pay good money to go watch you play? So we'll see what happens with all of that. Now, I want to jump into the news of the day right away. The first issue that we want to touch on, by the way, have Judge Roy Moore is going to be my guest in about 13 minutes. He declared this afternoon that he is going to run again for the United States Senate in the state of Alabama. Everybody in the world is against him. Everybody in the world is telling him not to do it, starting with the President of the United States. So we are going to ask the judge about all of that, get his reaction to all of that. Man, you talk about a guy that is persona non grata. That would be Judge Roy Moore. But he's bounced back from a lot worse than this. So we'll talk to him and see what he plans to do going forward. Now, the big, let's grab this soundbite, clip number 14. This is Senator Tom Cotton, you know, and we have been subject to a number of unprovoked attacks by Iran in recent past, including on our oil tankers. And then today, Iran in international waters shot down a drone. Now, when you and I think of a drone, we think of something you get for $40 at Walmart. That's not what this was. This was a $180 million drone. Has a bigger wingspan than a Boeing 737. This is an aircraft. I mean, if you want to call it an airplane, that's fine with me. It doesn't have a human pilot, but is an aircraft nonetheless. And Iran shot it down. So there's some serious provocation going on. Like I said, they've attacked our tankers. We've got indisputable visual evidence that they were attaching mines to the sides of these tankers to try to blow a hole in the hull. And here's Senator Tom Cotton. He's a military veteran. He's got a pretty good handle on this kind of stuff. And here's what he had to say. This goes back a few days. Here's what he had to say when we started reading about what Iran was doing to our oil tankers. Clip 14.
Going back to President Washington and all the way down to President Trump, the fastest way to get the fire and fury of the U.S. military unleashed on you is to interfere with the freedom of navigation on the open seas and in the air. That's exactly what Iran is doing, and one of the world's most important strategic choke points.
Okay, you know, our first encounter with radical Islam, our first encounter with the militancy that represents fundamentalist Islam, and make no mistake about it, fundamentalist Islam is not a religion of peace. It's a religion of war, violence, and death. And we discovered that. Thomas Jefferson, John Adams were ambassadors to Europe. And what we were discovering is that Muslim pirates in the Barbary states, that was on the northern coast of Africa, in the Mediterranean, Tripoli and Libya and places like that, were attacking our commercial shipping in the Mediterranean Sea, and they were destroying the ships. They were burning them. They were killing and kidnapping. They killed anybody they could, and then they kidnapped the soldiers that remained, sold them into slavery. And Thomas Jefferson, being trained in the Judeo-Christian tradition where you just don't do this, this is something evil, I wanted to know why they were doing that. He and John Adams were completely nonplussed. So in 1783, they met with the Bey of Tripoli, the head dude in Tripoli, head Muslim dude, and said, "What the heck is going on? Why are you attacking our ships with no provocation? We've never done anything to you. We haven't attacked you. We haven't provoked you. We haven't plundered any of your ships. And yet you're doing that to us." And the Bey of Tripoli said, "Well, that's what our prophet taught us to do. That's what our holy book, the Quran, tells us to do. It tells us that if there's anybody we run into that has not embraced the prophet, that has not embraced Allah, that has not embraced the Quran, it's open season. You can kill them. In fact, you should kill them at will, and you can plunder their property. You can kill anybody you want, cut their heads off, and you can take them into slavery and sell them and make some money." And so that's what they were doing. And he said this very matter of fact. This is no big deal. This is just the way we roll in the Islamic world. And that's one of the things that sent Thomas Jefferson back to his copy of the Quran. He'd gotten one back in law school and probably never cracked it. But this happens. He said, "I got to find out what's going on here." So he went to the Quran and he found out this is exactly what the Quran teaches. This is what the Holy Book of Islam teaches. This is what the God of Islam teaches. This is what the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, teaches. We're just doing what our religion has told us to do. So we'll see where this goes. Donald Trump has made it very, very clear. If they kill a single American, there's going to be retaliation. You know, and Tom Cotton says, look, going all the way back to our founding as a country, if you make an unprovoked attack on our shipping, I mean, these are attacks on civilians now, commercial shipping. This is not the government. This is not an attack on the U.S. government. It's attack on U.S. citizens in their private capacity as commercial seamen. You do that, Donald Trump says, and we're going to come after you, and we should. So we have not allowed unprovoked attacks on commercial shipping since the days of Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, and we should not start now. You know, and the fact that we have not yet responded to their attack on our commercial shipping is one of the reasons that may have emboldened Iran to go ahead and shoot this drone out of the sky, $180 million down the tubes, down the drain, in the drink. So we'll see what President Trump does. He's pledged a strong reaction, and I hope that Iran gets a strong reaction. They need it. They're out of control. If you don't stop them, it only emboldens them. So we'll see where that goes. Now, another story that's worth looking at from the world of Iran and the Middle East is this trial for this Chief Gallagher guy who is being charged with a war crime for killing a young prisoner who was fighting for ISIS. Now, Chief Gallagher, visited this guy in the hospital where he was being treated. And according to the medic who was taking care of this youth, what Chief Gallagher did is take his knife and he plunged it into his chest right above the collarbone. And so he started bleeding, and then apparently Chief Gallagher left the room. So that's what they're trying him for. Now the medic stepped into the picture. He gave testimony today. This is just phenomenal, where this guy's name is Scott. Where's his first name here? Corey Scott, Special Warfare Operator First Class. He was a medic. So he said when he saw this happening, in his judgment, the knife wound was not a lethal wound. It was not a fatal wound. He believed that this ISIS soldier was going to survive. So what Special Warfare Operator First Class Corey Scott did, is he covered the wounded prisoner's breathing tube. And this asphyxiated the ISIS soldier. So he was killed not by the knife wound from Chief Gallagher. He was killed by the medic who asphyxiated him by blocking his breathing tube. The medic who said he did not think that the wound was fatal. And he said today, the reason I did it, I knew what was going to befall this teen if he lived and walked out of the hospital. He was going to run into the wrath of ISIS, and what they were going to do to him was going to be far worse than him dying in a hospital bed. So he said, basically, he said it was a mercy killing. I knew what was ahead of this guy. I didn't want anybody to suffer like that. So that's why I held my hand, blocked his breathing tube. Now, this has knocked the military's case, the prosecution, completely into a cocked hat. Because, and this is something Judge Napolitano just couldn't believe it on Fox News today. He said, you never see this happen. You've got this witness, this Corey Smith guy, who is under oath, and he confessed in the courtroom today as a witness for the prosecution that he's the one that murdered the prisoner. It wasn't Chief Gallagher at all. I was the one that did it. And remember, he was a witness for the prosecution. And this is what left Judge Napolitano just almost gasping for air. This guy's a government witness, and he completely torpedoes their case by saying, he didn't do it, I did it. Judge Napolitano said like it was an old version of Perry Mason, where you get everybody in the courtroom and the guilty guy that nobody suspects confesses to it in the middle of the trial. So I don't see how they can go after Gallagher after this. He's got other charges that he's facing, and maybe they will continue to go after him for those. But this was the big one. And from a legal standpoint, even according to the Universal Code of Military Justice, I just don't see how they can continue and move ahead with a prosecution for this guy. So anyway, we'll see where that goes. Seems to me like this guy eventually is going to walk if he does get convicted for something. You know, and what people forget, I'm not excusing anything this guy might have done. I don't know enough about it to know exactly what he did or to even have an opinion about that. But you know what we forget, ladies and gentlemen, and we need to remember, is that we are at war with these people. ISIS is trying to wipe us off the face of the planet. This is not tiddlywinks. This is not bridge. This is literally a battle for the survival of our civilization, because ISIS wants to wipe it out. So somewhere in all of the commentary and reflection on this, we need to factor that into the picture. We are talking here about war, not talking about tiddlywinks. We're not talking about tetherball at recess. So we'll see how that how all of that turns out. Turns out that Joe Biden today was discovered to have referred to Jesse Jackson and to Gary Hart by using the word boy. And the media is just apoplectic over this. They're going nuts over this, him calling a black dude boy. But you look at what he said. He used the same term for Gary Hart, talking about how smart they are. And he said, look, talking about Gary Hart, that boy is no dummy. Talking about Jesse Jackson, that boy's no dummy. He's a pretty smart cookie. So Biden was actually complimenting them. You know, this is one of the few times I've had any kind of, you know, sympathy for Joe Biden, because his words being taken completely out of context. He's being completely pilloried, eviscerated by his Democratic opponents. Now, speaking of being eviscerated, our next guest knows exactly what that's like. When he ran for Senate in Alabama 2017, special election, faced off against Doug Jones, he was accused of things that had absolutely no basis in fact whatsoever. Completely unverified, completely unconfirmed, exactly what the Steele dossier was all about when it came to Donald Trump. And so everybody, including Donald Trump, telling Judge Roy Moore, don't run for Senate. Judge Moore says, I'm going to do it anyway. We'll be back with him in a moment.
Infanticide has Illinois' stamp of approval. I am Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. These are dark days in Illinois. The state Senate just passed a horrific pro-abortion bill. It's even more extreme than New York's infanticide law. For example, unborn babies are completely stripped of all rights. Abortions will be allowed at any time during a pregnancy. So this means completely healthy, full-term babies can be murdered. Medical professionals will be forced to perform abortions, and insurance companies will be required to pay for the atrocious act. It also eliminates waiting periods and spousal and parental consent. Minors would be able to obtain abortions without their parents giving permission. Not only that, non-consenting parents would be forced to pay for the abortion. This has nothing to do with health care. This is a crime against humanity. Please pray for changed hearts in Illinois and for those precious babies. Stay informed at Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org.
I have a friend who has three sons, two of whom are everything you would want from a son. The third son, not so much. He's a rebel. His father hasn't seen him in almost 3 years. I asked which son was his favorite, and he said, I love all my sons. But he said, with tears welling in his eyes, I miss Jimmy so much. Ever think that your Heavenly Father misses you so much? If you've been in the far country, he doesn't want anything from you. He just misses you and wishes you would come home. It's called love. It doesn't have an explanation. It just is. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
Brian Fisher here. One of the enduring lies of Satan is that diversity is a source of strength. It's not. The wrong kind of diversity weakens, divides, and destroys. It is unity that makes us strong. America, until recently, has enjoyed a profound unity of cultural values. We've shared an agreement on cultural standards regarding God, the Ten Commandments, sex, marriage, and the sanctity of human life, and that is what has made us strong and powerful. As that unity is attacked and destroyed in the name of diversity, America becomes progressively weaker. Harvard scholar Robert Putnam concluded that diversity, right down to the community level, causes social withdrawal, isolation, distrust, civic disengagement and unrest, and reduced community involvement. Diversity does not unite communities, it divides them and destroys them. We can do better.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Howdy, welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. I am Brian Fisher, sitting in for the inestimable Abraham Hamilton III. Glad to have you in the conversation. It's an honor for me to welcome to our decision-maker line our next guest, Judge Roy Moore. And Judge Moore today, there was a lot of speculation about this. Judge Moore came on as a guest on this program and said, look, I'm considering it. People didn't know where he stood. He said on this program, well, on Focal Point, program that I do earlier in the day, that I'm considering it. Today he announced that he is, in fact, going to run for Senate against what's increasingly crowded GOP field. Judge Moore, welcome back to the Hamilton Corner, guest hosted by Brian Fisher. Welcome.
Thank you, Brian. Nice to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you with us, especially on a day like this. This is a pretty significant day, really, in American politics. And Judge Moore, I know that you have read the things that have been said about you. Donald Trump says he doesn't want you to run. Donald Trump's son today said this: I can assure everyone that by running, Roy Moore is going against my father and is doing a disservice to all conservatives. And Donald Trump Sr. said that you don't have a chance to win. So what is your, that's a pretty powerhouse group that arrayed against you. What's your reaction to that?
Well, of course, I'm running for the people of the state of Alabama. The people of Alabama know me. The polls indicate I can win. And actually, the Republicans got involved in the last general election and defeated and helped the Democrat win the seat. Now, it's hypocrisy now for them to say, you can't win because you were beaten. They helped beat me the last time. And I think people have seen through that now, and they've had enough, and they're ready to vote the right way. So I'm going to continue what I'm doing, and it's not bravery. It's trusting God will give the right income or right result, outcome. And that'll be up to him or his will. And that's all I seek is God's will.
Now, the polling data, you just mentioned the polling data and some of the other candidates that have declared, former Auburn University football coach Tommy Tuberville and Representative Bradley Byrne, State Representative Arnold Mooney, Secretary of State John Merrill has filed paperwork. Richard Shelby said, he's a senator from Alabama, said that even Jeff Sessions has not ruled out running for his old seat. So that's a pretty crowded field. What's your reaction to how many horses there are in this race?
Well, the more the merrier. I don't care how many get involved. It's still a race to be won. It's like a football game. Polls don't win national championships, as we all know. And football coaches should know that. We've got to run the race. The Bible speaks clearly about running the race, doesn't it? Let them also, being surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us run with patience. It says, let's lay aside every weight and the sin which is so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. And I think that's what we've got to do, run with patience, looking at Jesus, author and finisher of our faith.
I'm looking at some go ahead, Judge. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's such a good analogy. I happened to see that movie, Run the Race with Tebow, Tim Tebow's movie, and it had meaning. It has a lot of meaning. I advise everybody to watch that movie. It was about two boys in athletics and brothers, and it was a Christian setting. And it's a very good movie, but it has a good analogy in our life. If you run the race, you're going to endure the cross, despise the shame, and be like Christ. And that's what we've got to do.
And, Judge, I want to cycle back to that in just a quick second. I just want to touch on one thing about the polling data. This is from an internal poll that was conducted by Tuberville's campaign. And this internal poll that they did said that Tuberville is leading the race with 23% of the vote, trailed closely by you at 18%, and then Bradley Byrne at 16%. And the rest of them picked a different candidate or didn't even really have a preference, a third of those that were polled. So it looks like from the early polling data, and you never can tell from that, but it kind of looks like this may be a kind of a three-horse race, you and Coach Tuberville and Bradley Byrne. How would you differentiate yourself? Let's say it comes down to the three of you. How would you differentiate yourself from those two candidates to the voters of Alabama? Why should they vote for you instead of one of them?
Well, I hate at this stage to start comparing myself with others. I look at my credentials, and I served people of Alabama for nearly 40 years. I've been in the prosecutor's office, a judge, chief justice twice. I've worked at the Foundation for Foreign Law to protect our religious liberty for many, many years. I'm serving my country. I was in Vietnam. The voters just have to look at all the candidates and choose the best one they want. And that's what I'll say. I'm not going to try to compare my credentials with anybody else.
You know, one of the things that strikes me, Judge Moore, looking at your career, and I freely admit to this listening audience that Judge Moore is one of my all-time heroes, but you look back at your career, Judge Moore, and what you had to endure as the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, first of all, with the Ten Commandments Monument, which you placed in the Supreme Court building, and you defended it. And you eventually, I guess, had some federal judge yank you out of there and tell you to go away. And then the same thing happened. You got reelected to the Supreme Court bench, Chief Justice. And you really, in my estimation, were the only judge in the country that took a principled stand against the Obergefell decision, where the Supreme Court imposed same-sex marriage on the whole country. So the voters of Alabama, they look at you, and what they see is this guy, maybe I don't agree with all of his principles, but there's no quit in this cowboy. This guy stands for what he believes. He tells you what he believes, and then he stands for it. It seems to me that maybe a lot of Alabamians are going to think that's the kind of guy I want representing me back in D.C. with the swamp.
Well, I think there's a lot of problems that we have in our federal government. There's a lot of problems in our state government, for that matter. There's a lot of problems in governments in general, and they're out of control. They've become ruling over the people. They, just like in this case with me, why should the people in Washington, D.C., the establishment, why should senators and the National Republican Senate Committee be selecting the candidate for the Senate in Alabama? That's ridiculous. This is states' rights. This is not the right of a party. Or why should someone like Senator Shelby get in and say that he's going to be firmly against me, as he was in the general election last year, and then turn around and say that I can't beat the candidate? Well, he helped defeat me last time. And this is hypocrisy. It's something they're hiding. I don't know why they get so upset with me, why they fear me so much, why there's a hatred there. I represent conservative values. I'm conservative not only physically, I'm conservative socially. I believe in God. I believe in moral value. I believe that without God, the First Amendment, religion clauses are meaningless, because God is the one that gives us liberty. And our forefathers recognized that. And things like the secular humanism and atheism are allowed to prosper simply because we don't know our rights as Christians. And I think that's very important to me. But it's also very important to everyone to learn that government has limitations. And states have rights under the 10th Amendment. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, or reserved to the states respectfully or to the people. A lot of people don't understand the rights of states. And I think that the whole Constitution was meant to make us a great nation, and we're disregarding it, disregarding laws passed by Congress, as we're seeing on the borders. That should be stopped immediately, and it should be unanimously. We should go by laws, the rule of law. And
now you were a big supporter of President Trump and his agenda back when you were running for the Senate in 2017. He has come out against you in this race. Where do you stand today with regard to President Trump and his agenda? Has this changed the way you look at what he's setting about to do?
No, it can't change the way I look at what he's doing. I think he's doing a lot of good things. And I support the good things that he does. I can't say I agree with anybody 100% and everything, but I'll be voting for him. I don't want to see our country go to socialism. I don't want to see our country go away from God. And, you know, we do need border security. We do need balanced trade. We need so many things to return jobs to our country. I'm still concerned about NAFTA and CAFTA, Central American Free Trade Agreement.
And it seems, Judge, that people want to try to pigeonhole you as the Ten Commandments judge or whatever, and seem to be oblivious to the fact that you've got a well-rounded agenda. You have positions that are strong and conservative on a lot of issues, whether it's the economy or whether it is the border or whether it's states' rights. It seems to me that if more people in Alabama are able to figure that out about you and get past all of the chaff that's been tossed in the air, it might make a big difference in your electoral chances.
Well, I hope so, and I hope to let people know me and and know what, you know, I've written a lot of good opinions on the Supreme Court. We reversed one case on the post-minority support that's been in effect for 24 years that was killing families and separating families. I overturned that with an opinion and stopped something that was wrong and made it right. You know, it was a very big opinion, and it wasn't just the Ten Commandments or my opposition to same-sex marriage. My opposition to same-sex marriage and the Ten Commandments were both very legal stance, and I can justify them.
Well, you know, that's one thing, Judge Moore, why I admired so much what you did in the whole Obergefell thing. You know, we were talking a minute ago about states' rights, and I'd be willing to bet that most of the conservatives in Alabama, big believers in states' rights, probably big-time believers in states' rights. That was a concern a lot of us had at the time, that the Supreme Court was ignoring the constitutional right of states to settle a decision like the definition of marriage for themselves. They wanted to arrogate that to themselves, and then you had 34 states at one point that had, or 33 that had constitutional amendments banning same-sex marriage. Alabama was one of those, so the state of Alabama had weighed in. So you had a lot of people in the conservative sphere that were complaining about this. This isn't right. What about states' rights? And you were the only one that stood on the Constitution and stood up to that tide.
Because I understood the meaning of the 10th Amendment legally. And I understood that, as Justice Thomas said in 1993 in Lockhart versus Fretwell, in our federal system, a state trial court's interpretation of a federal constitutional issue is just as authoritative as the federal court of appeals in whose circuit the state trial court is situated. Now, that simply means this: that state trial courts could have ruled on their state constitution as being completely in conformity with the United States Constitution, and if a state Supreme Court takes that position, no federal court of appeals can overturn it. It has to be the United States Supreme Court. Today, Alabama stands as the only state that has ruled on their constitutional amendment of marriage between a man and woman, both before and after Obergefell, upholding injunctions, but you don't see anybody doing a thing about it. Mm. People don't like to challenge or don't like to put things up the Supreme Court, but Alabama could, and I hope they do.
Well, you know, and I wonder if that's part of the opposition to you, Judge Moore, even in conservative circles. You kind of scare them, because the stuff that they say they believe, you know, the platitudes that they express and that they mouth about the sanctity of marriage and the sanctity of states' rights, they're just platitudes to them,
right,
but they are real to you, and so it makes you stand out by contrast.
Well, you know, as the family goes, so goes the nation. When we've disrupted the family and destroyed parental authority, and when we've separated families and allowed homosexual adoptions, and we're taking men and women and destroying their roles, these things do concern me. But what really concerns me is they're not for a court to do. And when courts do that, they violate the rule of interpretation as opposed to amendment in the United States Constitution. They amend the Constitution by judicial fiat and thereby violate one of the basic premises of the Constitution: separation of powers, checks and balances, and the Article 5 role of amending the Constitution in a proper way. This goes back many years. It goes back to 1937, when Justice Sutherland voiced what the role of the judiciary was. He said it was not to make law, it was to interpret law, basically. I could quote it, but I don't want to do that too much because people think I do it too much sometimes.
But you can't do it too much for me, I'll tell you that.
You've got to understand that the 10th Amendment means something on the ground. And what it does mean on the ground is there's two avenues to the Supreme Court of the United States. This is basic law in every law school. One goes through the state trial courts. The other goes through the federal courts. Now, our error is we...
Judge, I've got just 15 seconds, so okay. I want to hear what you got to say, but wrap it up as quickly as you can.
Well, state courts just have much cause and reason and authority to interpret the federal constitutional issue as due to the courts.
Our guest has been Judge Roy Moore, candidate declared today for Senate in the state of Alabama. Thank you, Judge, for being with us.
I've been leading tours to Israel for over 25 years. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I started going to Israel with my dad in the 80s and learned how to lead tour groups. And so been doing it ever since. And now my wife has joined me, Allison, and we love taking folks who support AFA and listen to AFR to Israel. And we'd love to have you come along with us as well. That's in March of 2020. We're letting you know ahead of time because we know that people need as much advance notice as possible to get ready for a trip like this. So if you want to go with us to the Holy Land in March, go ahead and get the information at twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. All the information on the March trip to Israel is posted there, and hope you can join us.
Wisdom from the aged. This is David Wheaton, host of the Christian Worldview. We live in a culture that worships youth, while the aged are often dismissed as being passé. And yet God's word extols the aged. The Bible says, "Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Get wisdom and instruction and understanding." Wisdom is the skill of thinking and living as God intends. The aged who have immersed themselves in the Word of God and followed Christ for decades have grown in wisdom that is invaluable for the next generations. We'd best listen and follow their counsel. Hear the annual interview with my parents, who are in their mid-80s, at thechristianworldview.org, and then join us this weekend for another topic that will sharpen your worldview.
Listen to The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton, Saturday mornings at 8 Central on American Family Radio.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
The Supreme Court saves the day. That story coming up. The Supreme Court has decided the Bladensburg World War I Memorial Peace Cross can remain on public land. It's a major ruling in the fight to save American traditions and values from the hands of the secularist. The 40-foot-tall cross was erected nearly 100 years ago to memorialize the war dead from Prince George's County, Maryland. In a 7-2 decision, the court ruled that while the cross is a Christian symbol, the Bladensburg Cross has a special significance as a war memorial. Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor dissented. This marks a huge victory for First Liberty Institute, the law firm that represented the American Legion in their fight against the American Humanist Association. The court's decision is an affirmation that religious symbols do, in fact, have a place in the public marketplace. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Howdy, and welcome back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio. Brian Fisher is my name, sitting in for the inestimable and incomparable Abraham Hamilton III. And we'll open up the phone lines. I'd like to get your reaction to what you heard from Roy Moore. Your reactions to him running again, what you think about him. Love to know what you think about all of that. Number to call to join our conversation here in the last segment is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. Give us a call. Tell us your first name, where you're from, city and state. Marty will load you up, and we'll have a conversation about it. Now, a couple of things before we go to the phones. That's, again, 888-589-8840 is the number to take your comments and questions about Judge Roy Moore and his candidacy for the United States Senate in the state of Alabama. I'm looking here at a poll from the Mason-Dixon Group. That's a reputable polling group. This is from April 2019, so it's a little bit dated. But back in April, Mason-Dixon had Roy Moore leading the race. If you had to vote today in the Alabama Republican primary, who would you vote for? 27% of Alabamians at that time said Judge Roy Moore. Next guy was Mo Brooks at 18%, and then on down the line. So I think it's way, way too early to count Roy Moore out of this thing, I think, like the left wants to do. And there's an opening there. You know, Doug Jones, his job rating, 44% disapprove and 45% approve. He's barely got his nose above water in the approval-disapproval polls. And when it comes to 2020, voters were asked if they would vote to keep Doug Jones or vote to replace him. 40% said they would reelect him, but 50%, a majority of Alabama voters, said they would vote to replace Doug Jones. So what that tells us, the polling data, the fact that the people of Alabama appear ready to make a change from Doug Jones, who has not been a scintillating U.S. senator, means that there is an opening, there is an opportunity for Judge Roy Moore in his campaign for the Senate, United States Senate, in Alabama. So the number again is 888-589-8840. I'd like to get your reactions to my conversation with Judge Roy Moore. A couple of other quick things before we go to your phone calls. Up in Alaska, the government allowed a Satanist to offer the opening prayer at a regional Alaska government meeting. So the Satanic Temple member opened with a Hail Satan prayer during her invocation. About a dozen officials and attendees just walked out. This was the Kenai Peninsula borough. So anyway, that's what's going on up there in Alaska. Now, in Oregon, don't know if you'd heard about this, Oregon big-time greenies, I mean lunatic green up in Oregon. I used to live next door, so I know whereof they speak. And they are trying to get a very aggressive climate change bill passed. It's a carbon cap. This is a terrible thing. I mean, it's a horrible piece of legislation. A carbon cap, if carbon was the problem, ladies and gentlemen, then a carbon cap might make some sense. But carbon is not the problem. Carbon dioxide is our friend. Carbon dioxide is plant food. Carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. We would die without carbon dioxide. Plants drink it in, and they release oxygen in turn. They use the carbon dioxide to grow stuff so we can eat, and they release the byproduct back into the air as oxygen. So we are dependent on the cycle in nature that God created that includes carbon dioxide. It's a gas of life. We're dependent on it. You know, you want to make your plants grow better in your greenhouse, you pump it full of carbon dioxide. So anyway, the Republicans are absolutely right to oppose this thing. It would be terrible. It would be terrible for the Oregon economy because of the taxes that people would have to pay to support this thing. So what the Republican senators did, let's see, there's 18 Democrats and 11 Republicans, and they need 20 for a quorum. So they have 18 Democrats. Unless two Republicans show up, they don't even have a quorum. They cannot do any state business. The Republicans left the building like Elvis, and nobody knows where they are. The police are out there looking for them. They're going to grab them, horse collar them, and drag them back into the Capitol to form a quorum. Now, I'm not saying one thing or another about this particular tactic, but they're certainly right about the issue. They're certainly right that this is an absolutely terrible piece of legislation for the voters, for the citizens, for the taxpayers in the state of Oregon. All right, let's grab a call from Gary in Texas. Gary, welcome. What's on your mind? Let's see, click it again. What happened? How come I'm not getting it? All right. I don't know what's going on here. Let me try again. I don't know how to get on this thing here. Okay, let me... Man, I don't want to lose Gary. But I'm afraid if I click on somebody else, the same thing will happen. I got the lock thing. How do I get rid of that lock thing and take a call? So, okay. Okay, Gary, I'm going to have to try to take another call. I feel terrible if I lose you. It's a complete accident on my part. Let's go to Barbara now at Blocks Barbara. So where is that connection thing? It's not that? Here we go. Got the connection thing, desktop director, no director, talent. All right, let's try that again. Okay, let's see if that works. Gary, I think I might have lost you. Barbara, I deeply apologize. I just didn't know which button to push here. Let's go to D in Texas. D, welcome. What's on your mind? Talk to me.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Thank you for your show and your leadership. It really means a lot, your leadership on that.
You're welcome.
I'm from the Houston area of Texas, and I'm very fortunate. Ted Cruz is my senator, and I'm just thrilled to death about that. But I tell you what, if I were from Alabama, I would tell everybody down there to vote for Judge Roy Moore. I've not seen a man with greater knowledge or integrity in the public office. I don't believe anything was said about him just because of the way he is. If I were the Alabamians, I would go ahead and just put their nose up in the air, put him in office, send him to Washington, and let all havoc break loose. Yeah. The only reason people don't like him is because he's holding a mirror up to their faces and they can't look at it with themselves.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing, D. You're absolutely right. It would be a kick in the pants, regardless of what you think about Roy Moore's politics and his ideology. I would love to see him in D.C. because that dude is going to rattle some cages. So, all right, D. Listen, I appreciate the call. Let's grab a call from Christy in Louisiana. Christy, welcome. What's on your mind? Talk to me.
Well, I think here it is.
What's that?
Hi.
Do you know that you're on, Christy, with me?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. What's on your mind? Turn your radio down. That may be part of the problem. Okay. Get some feedback from the...
I think we got lost of what I was saying. I was saying that, if the United States says that we can pass same-sex marriages, and there's one state that says we can't, it's kind of defeating the purpose. I think that, we're kind of way past that. I know I'm going to get into transgender after that. That's gotten blown out of proportion. I think this this same guy in Alabama, I think he's a little too conservative with everything that he's talking about. I know people aren't going to agree with me. I'm a Christian. Like I said, I'm a lesbian. I'm married to a woman, and we're Christians. We raise kids. I think that he was saying something about homosexuals raising kids and everything. You know, some kids don't even have homes, and even though that there's two men or two women in the home, they don't raise them as being lesbians or gay. They raise them as being their kids.
And, now, Christy, let me ask you a couple of questions here, and I appreciate you calling in, and I appreciate you being forthright about your Christian faith. So let me ask you a question. You're a lesbian. You're married to a woman. Let me ask you about how that interfaces with your Christian faith, because the Bible says for this reason, this is Genesis 2, first, second chapter of the Bible, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and cling to his wife, and the two, one man, one woman, will be one. And then Jesus repeated that in Matthew 19, so it's not just an Old Testament deal. Jesus quoted it and said, marriage is the union of one man and one woman. So according to the Bible, marriage from day one has been an institution that involves one man coming together with one woman. So as a Christian, and I think you are sincere in your Christian faith, but it sounds to me like you're misguided about what the Bible teaches about marriage.
Marriage between a man and a woman is procreate. And, you know, when you have two men and two women and they adopt, they're not into actually having kids together. They're actually having kids to help raise or give a home to give a good home to a family. I'm sorry, I'm on the road and I can't hear that well. Anyway, I understand what you're saying, and I understand what the Bible is saying. And
but Christy, let me just press you on this a little bit. You know what the Bible is saying, but you are rejecting what the Bible is saying. How does that square with being a Christian?
Well, I never rejected what the Bible was saying. It was saying that I was married to a man for 17 years and had 3 kids. And this might be a program for everybody to listen to. They might not agree with what I'm saying. And later in life, I decided to marry a woman. And my kids are very fine with it. We raised Christian kids. Me and my ex-husband are very big on being teen parents. We remarried to a woman. They have another child. I understand the
now,
Bible.
Christy, let me ask you a question about that. I mean, you talk about having children. Two lesbians together can't have children. That's part of the genius of
Absolutely.
God's design for marriage.
Adopt,
how do you get children in a lesbian marriage?
You adopt.
Okay, Christy, let me
actually get artificially inseminated. I mean, everybody has the right to have children, no matter what.
Where do you get that? Everybody has the right to have children. Where do you get that?
Everybody has the right to have a child if they would like to. I mean, a man, a woman, or anybody. I mean, whether it be in a relationship with a man or a woman that's married, or two women, or man. I mean, everybody has the right to have children.
Well, Christy, let me ask you this question, because what you're advocating for is contrary to everything we know about social research. You know, on the gender issue, we're not going to have time to get to the transgender issue, but the Bible likewise is very clear about that. There's only two. God created the male and female from the beginning. He created the male and female. So according to God, according to the Bible, there are just two genders. There's male and there's female. There isn't some kind of trans thing. There's two genders, and God's design for marriage is for one man to be married to one woman. And so the genders, according to the Bible, are not interchangeable. It's not an incidental thing that there are men and that there are women. They are different in every single solitary cell of their bodies. Men are different than women, which means each of them have something unique and different to bring to the marriage relationship, and each of them have something unique and different to bring to the life of children. In other words, fathers have something to contribute to the lives of their children that a mother can't, and a mother invests things in the life of her children that a father can't. That's why it takes two of them together to provide an optimal environment, nurturing environment for children. And all the social research indicates, and this is a longitudinal study, was done with adults who had grown up in same-sex households, and what they discovered, looking at 80 different parameters, children raised in man-woman households did better on 77 out of the 80 factors, whether you're talking about mental health, you're talking about educational achievement, all those kind of things. So it seems that you're kind of flying in the face of the Bible, flying in the face of social science. Christy, I've got 15 seconds. You got the last word. That's all the time you've got. Hit me.
In a normal world, we would all agree with that, but we know we don't live in a normal world. And we know that we live in a lot of households that don't have two parents. And sometimes it's better to have two people in the household, no matter if it's two men or two women, at least it would have somebody in there that would have a peer.
All right, Christy, listen, I'm completely out of time. Thank you for the conversation. I enjoyed that very much, and God bless you. That's it for the Hamilton Corner today.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.